Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good morning. It's time for another edition of It's My House. And, of course, on Fridays we do the Amish economics portion of this. And today we have a very special guest on. I call him Chief Barber Shango out of Columbus, Ohio. And I saw there's a film that you can watch for free, a documentary on YouTube titled Flag Wars. And it's a very, I would say everybody in the listening audience, particularly those people who are familiar with the word gentrification, this is a must-see film on a lot of levels. We won't be able to cover all of the levels today, but on a lot of levels. Now, for those of you that are listening to us online via Blog Talk Radio, I would suggest, you know, go to the It's My House, part of the Blog Talk site, which is blogtalk/SoALandlord. And on the flashcard portion of the show, you'll see some pictures of Brother Shango's on there. And then we have some of the other characters, well, not characters, some of the other people, I shouldn't say characters, people that were in the movie Flag Wars, a documentary Flag Wars, like the judge and Brother Shango go through who he was. And then a very interesting person, Linda Regina Mitchell. You see a couple of pictures of her on there. And maybe her house at the time. And anyway, so, Chief, introduce yourself and what are you doing in Columbus, and how did you come to participate in the film Flag Wars? And what is the overall theme of Flag Wars?
Linda Goodman, who now lives in New York, who originally was from Columbus, came to visit her father, and she'd seen all these flags. She saw the African Liberation flag, and she saw the rainbow flag. And she asked her dad, what were these flags about? And he told her that what the two flags represent. So she came up with the idea of doing a documentation on gentrification of the Near East Side and entitled it Flag Wars. So she came back and forth with her partner from New York over a period of 4 years to make this documentation, which is known as Flag Wars. And I've been operating a nonprofit gallery since 75. We bought the building and incorporated in 78 under Urban Cultural Arts Foundation, and we've been going strong since. We're the first black and owned gallery, keyword is owned gallery, in Columbus. And our mission was, oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I just said, okay, I'm listening.
Oh, okay. So that's how I got involved. So when she came in, she wanted to do the film, people had suggested that she come and talk to me because I was, had organized a lot of people in the community around art and culture. We use art and culture as a means to help bring about change. We watch the politicians and we watch the preachers and we watch the militants and we say, well, there must be another way. So we use art and culture. Let people know of their history and how great they were, and they should be great also. And after it's all said and done, what is left behind but what the artists have created for future generations to see. So that's how we use art, to give people images, to educate them, to uplift them. And you give them a symbol, and there's a million words behind the symbol. So she asked me to be a part of that. And before that, I had gone to New York and Boston, and I was a VISTA volunteer in the 60s, so I learned community organizing. just use the skills that the government taught me to organize the people in the community around the culture.
Okay, community organizing. All right, that's a nice factoid. I always take notes during these shows. Now, watching the film Flag Wars, I've watched it at least three times so far. Because the matter of fact, I watched it before we actually started this program, It's My House. The reason why I was so, I like the film so much is because it does mention, at least represents to me, private property rights. Now, and that's what It's My House is about. We talk about various aspects of private property rights. Now, near the beginning of the film, there's a scene, two, three scenes or what have you, where Miss Mitchell is in court, environmental court, and you, with your own private residence, there's some, I guess, discrepancy at that time about a sign, your sign, because you're an artist, on your own home. So could you explain what environmental court is in Columbus, Ohio, and what was the situation with the sign on your home? And could you tell us about who Linda Regina Mitchell was?
Okay. She had property there, and she got the property from her parents, and her father was a big-time numbers runner in the 50s, so he had bought them a big house there in the neighborhood. But since then, he had died, and Linda was a welfare worker and worked at the welfare office for a period of time. But she succumbed to probably alcohol, wine, and maybe some other drugs, and got to the point where she was no longer able to maintain this big house, so it began to deteriorate. So the city, through people, devised a standard that they wanted to have their neighborhood maintained, and she fell below these standards that were created. So then they set up the environmental court to take people who didn't maintain these standards. I think originally these standards were set up for so-called slum landlords who would own a bunch of property and live somewhere else and not maintain these properties, but yet still and rent them out. So I think that was the original intent for these courts, to force the landlords to maintain these properties at a certain standards. So she fell below that. So, and then the community had been predominantly African-American. It started out as a Jewish community back at the turn of the century. So a lot of the rich Jews lived on around here, particularly on Bryden Road, where I have two houses. So they had moved out, and then we kind of moved in. And now this part of the town, and this isn't just happening in Columbus. This has happened all around the world.
You're right, all around the world. You're right.
And we have a rich property. It has architectural values. We have broad streets. We have 100-year-old trees. And it's just lovely. And there was a move for the European American to move away from the city, probably in the 50s, 60s, to the suburbs. But they're tired of cutting that acre and a half ground that they have and driving back and forth to the cities to work. You know, they're getting killed on the freeways. They don't want to drive in the snow or whatever. So the younger kids are are moving back in. I think first the gays began to move in, and then some professors from the university moved in, and some artists moved in. In the beginning, they were the groundbreakers, and then they organized themselves to begin to control the area because they're more affluent. They aren't worried about surviving day to day. They read the fine print. They're in the positions in government or retail or whatever, and they have power. And they stick together and they communicate and they have meetings before the meetings. And so they're able to make changes, whereas the indigenous people aren't in a position to make changes, aren't even aware that they sometimes can make changes because they haven't been as affluent or as educated or whatever. But life is changing and every day. But it's up to us to be aware of our history and who we were and what we have done in the past and the number of things that we have invented and created and not necessarily get credit for or even being aware that we are able to do those. And so if we did them in the past, we can certainly continue to do them and do them in the future. So you need to come up with a plan and implement your plan. Just you have more success with your plan, I think, if you keep it legal, give Caesar what's Caesar, and you keep it moral. And that way you have the positive energy on your side. I think that's where we have to begin to look at.
Mm-hmm. You bring up some very good points. Because I'm taking note, as I do with all these shows, while the guest is speaking. I like what you said about they have meetings before the meetings. And it's also up to us to know our history. So essentially, because a lot of people who get, I think there have been, I mean, the statistic I got off the internet was like, I think 1,600 neighborhoods that used to be historically African-American are no longer African-American. However, just basically based on the two statements that you said here, two of the statements, it's number one, it's up to us to know our history. So a lot of us don't know the history of the neighborhood, let alone know our overall history that might not be in terms of the United States as in relationship to, let's say, from 1863 for 100 years to 1963. A lot of us don't know that. Because a lot of that stuff is taught in schools.
I'm going back to the beginning of time. We were one of the first people here, and a lot of other people came from us. And due to migration and people adapting to their environment brought about change. So that's how one of the reasons why we don't all look alike, but we all began from... we all began from one tribe, is what I'm trying to say, and we just branched out. And we're certainly the dominant of that tribe with our genes. We have the oldest. So.
And I agree. And another thing you said that I agree with is they have meetings before the meeting. So, but then they've organized themselves. Exactly.
We can do the We can do the same thing. We'll probably, I'm sure you heard of the Willie Lynch syndrome, and that seems to still have effect on us. It's hard for us to come together. It's hard for us to organize. It's hard for us to work together. We should look at the ants and look at the bees, how they work together. They're born in a certain, have job, and they do that job to the fullest. They don't worry about egos or your job is better than mine. They just, if you're a garbage man, be the best garbage man. If you're an electrician, be the best, you know, that's your way of life. That's your livelihood.
Right.
And
absolutely.
It takes all of us to get the job done. You know what I mean?
I agree. Now, in going back to the film, there was a discrepancy about a sign that you had on your own house. So could you explain more about that? I mean, people see the movie, they'll see it, but could you explain?
Well, what happened was a small number of people began to move into the neighborhood, and they wanted to make it historical. The majority of the people didn't have time to deal with that or wasn't paying any attention to that. So a small number of people were able to pass this ordinance to make this street historical. So when you make a street historical, then there are certain guidelines that you have to go by. And anything you want to do on the exterior of your house has to follow these guidelines. And I guess part of the guidelines was you can't have a sign hanging above the door. You can have it on the ground. But my sign was up before they changed the law. And I bought my house in 76 for $200.
Woo.
So I thought mine should have been grandfathered in. And then if I own this house, who are you to tell me what I should do with it? And if we're going by historical standards, are we going by your European-American standards? Are we going by my African ancestor standards? I mean, who is to say? Why should I follow your standards and you not respect mine? So we had a problem there. So I was asked to take the court. Someone dropped a dime on me, a guy two doors down from me dropped a dime on me and said that I had this sign up. So the city sent an inspector out and asked me to take the sign down. And I said, I'm not taking the sign down. This is my house, and the sign's been here since 79, and it's going to stay here. So then they got me to come to environmental court. So I went to environmental court. I got a lawyer, and I went to environmental court, and I made the mistake of saying, they said, well, if you could go before the historical commission and they gave you permission, everything would be all right. So I agreed to go do that, and I went there, and the guy who dropped a dime on me was there with about six other people. I spoke to him as we went in. I didn't know they were there to ambush me. So I went up there and told my case, and I got there. They allowed these other people to get up and testify. And they said, well, if you allow Baba to put up that sign, it's going against the standards of the Historic Commission, and other people will follow suit. So then they said I had to take the sign down. So I go back to court, and then the judge said, well, did you abate that issue? And to abate the issue was to get them to give me permission to have the sign. And I said, no, sir. I went down there, and I was ambushed, and all these people that don't look like me testified against me, and they said I couldn't do that. And then he said, well, now you're in contempt of court because you didn't abate the issue. So I remained in contempt of court, going back and forth to court for the next 2.5 years. It caused a lot of anxiety, not knowing what they're going to do or if they could fine me $100 a day. And then the guy who, Tom Pinnell, who I learned to do wood carving for, he had carved a sign, or either he drew the sign and I carved it, one or the other. But then he died, and then I said, well, oh, hell no, the sign definitely ain't coming down. So mm-hmm. I was just, but everyone was telling me to take it down. My lawyer told me to take it down. My ex-wife told me to take it down. But I'm a Taurus, and if I'm right, you know, I'm stubborn. So I wouldn't take it down, and we kept going back and forth to court. So I had the judge come out and do a site visit. And he saw this wonderful, beautiful gallery that we had and all this fabulous art collection. I just had an art collection sent to me from Africa, so it was really laid out. And he said, and we improved the neighborhood. And then when we started fixing up the houses, then other people started fixing up the houses. So we kind of started the trend. And he said, well, I see nothing wrong with a man who has art in his house. So the judge was on my side. But even before we did this, going back in our history and that we did before we learned Christianity, there's an African village in Beaufort, South Carolina, where the Yoruba priest Baba Osurgimen was there. So I went to visit him, and he did a reading the way Africans did before Christianity. He read it, and he said, well, if we do this and this and this and that, they will end up arguing with each other. And this was like 2 years before I even went to trial. So that gave me confidence, believing in our system, knowing that how the end result would turn out. So it did turn out just that way. The judge went against the city inspector, which is usually they generally work hand in hand, and
that's true. Yeah.
And he voted in my favor. So he threw the thing out of court, and I was able to keep my sign, and it stayed up there. And then when Linda Mitchell and her partner came to town, they documented all this over a period of 4.5 years, coming back and forth to New York, staying with their parents and interviewing people who you saw at the film and showing up for the different trial dates that you saw in the film. That was a period of about four years that they came. I was in court probably about 2.5 years, as I remember. And it cost me a lot of money, you know.
You were in court 2.5 years. I imagine did they find you?
No.
They put any sanctions on you? No sanctions on that end?
No.
Was there
where the money came from? Paying my lawyer, missing work. I had to take film pictures of other buildings on my street that had signs above the door, and they made them take them down. Like across the street, Central Community House, they had a sign above the door. They had to take their down. And then there was a few other buildings that had signs above the door. They made them take them down. But I was able to keep mine because I went to court and I fought it because I thought I was right.
All right, go ahead.
I just want to say.
You fought it, Andy.
You know, if you see a big, it's like David and Goliath. If you see something out there that's big, don't. If you feel you're right, go ahead and fight for it.
That's right.
You know,
right.
It ain't.
I agree.
It ain't over until you give up.
That's right. That's right.
It may
I
take
agree.
Time, but it all didn't happen to you at once, so it all ain't gonna go away at once. But
that's a good point.
Stand up for what you believe in. Particularly if it's
right
and moral. Know what I mean?
Now, that took 2+ years, and could you give us a ballpark on the money you spent on this?
It's out-of-pocket money would probably be $10,000, but the anxiety and the stress of all of it was, it weighed a lot on me. And then it affected the programs that I was doing at the gallery. At one point, they want us to stop and close down the gallery and stop teaching kids art and history. And, you know, we weren't going to pay attention to that.
Right. Now, one of the things I like to bring up is you put out a lot of information here. Is, like I said, It's My House is primarily about the different aspects of private property rights. And a lot of us don't have as much property rights as we assume we do. For instance, a year ago now, you went through around $10,000 in about 2+ years of aggravation dealing with a sign. That's why I'm telling people you got to watch this film, Flag Wars, on his own. And it's a very tasteful sign. It's not no cardboard job. It's a very tasteful piece of art. That it's his house. So, in my opinion, as well as others, he agrees that on your private property, you should be able to, come on a sign. All this aggravation.
I don't think we really own property. I think we're more or less caretakers and steward of property. As long as you're paying tax. I own 2 properties on Bryden Row, and both of them have been paid off. But I still have to pay taxes every year. And taxes are increasingly going up. The more people to come in and gentrify it and make it a better neighborhood makes my property go up. And I don't have any problems with mixed neighborhood. I think there's a benefit from it because when more European and white people move in my neighborhood, I know my services are going to get better. They're going to pay attention because these people are going to scream and holler for what they want. And they get what they want when they start screaming and hollering. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. So,
right.
And then we can't say if the man has the money, he wants to buy this house, who are we to say he can't do it? what we can do, if we want control of the house, then we should buy it. We need to pull our money together, pull our resources together, and buy up the houses.
Let's put a freeze right on that. We should buy the houses. Now, you mentioned, and I'm going to switch this over to Albert real quick, because I know, Albert, you got to be somewhere today. And Albert's out in Fresno, California. Anyway, Barbara, you mentioned that you purchased this house, which is a nice size house. For how much money originally?
$200. I just got back. I was a union plumber. I learned my took my apprenticeship in Boston after I got out of Vista. I came back home to visit my family, and there was this house a friend of mine's father wanted to buy, because he was buying houses. So we went in together. I gave him $200, and he put in $200. That was made $400. We gave it to this old white man about to die in Dayton because he didn't need it. And we bought the house. And then I went and got a low-interest loan. They had programs where you could get a low-interest loan if you lived next door to a dollar house, which meant you could buy a house for a dollar, but you had to take out a commercial or conventional loan to fix it up. That was one of the C ways they fixed up the neighborhood. So if you live in with a certain area of this house, you also qualify like a 2% or 3% low-interest loan. So I got the low-interest loan, the $25,000. I gutted it. I put a new roof on. I brought the tools and a new truck, and then I was broke, and then it took me another 13 years, putting in about $100 a week in labor, my labor, and anybody I could barter with off the jobs that I worked on, to complete it, to make it what it is today now. And that was probably in 89 when I completed it. And we do four basic shows out of art shows out of it a year. We do think tanks where we come up with a topic and we invite someone with some expertise to lead the discussion. We do an African Village Art Festival. This will be our 8th annual African Village Art Festival that we'll be doing. So although we're claiming the neighborhood, we're living in the neighborhood, we're doing rituals for the neighborhood, we're participating. And then at the same time, it's up to us to put ourselves in positions where we can begin to make the decisions. I was being affected by people who were making decisions like who would be on the NEAC, Near East Side Area Commission. So I got on the commission. So now I can help to influence the decisions that are going to happen in my neighborhood. So you gotta vote. You gotta educate yourself. You gotta put yourself in positions to make decisions about what is affecting you. Don't sit back there and say, "What are they doing this to me? Doing this?" Well, get in there with them. Join them. You should have conversations with your enemy so you can have dialogue, so you can come to some kind of change. But if you don't have any dialogue and you're just sitting there hating each other, like the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, they need to have dialogue. They need to sit down at the table and talk instead of staying separated. If they ain't talking, they can't come together anymore. So that's, we have to change our mindset. We have to change our attitudes. We have to lift up our mentalities. You know what I mean?
And Lee, that's where the communication comes in. Remember we talked about that?
Right, Albert. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, he's right. He's right about what he's saying. I believe in that. And I think you got a good point, because we talked about the pooling the monies together to start situation buying houses. And you're an example of that, perfect example of that. And it shows you can get it done in America if you just concentrate on that, see. And you're talking like communication. Everything I discussed earlier on previous shows, you brought it out all in the public there, that it can be done. And see, when I said I talked about buying houses for $200, $50, you just proved that, see. And then you mentioned also about working together to do like the plumbing, the trading off. You did that, okay. And so what my deal is, it can be done if you really want it to be done, and you are a perfect example again to show that it can be done. But you have to work together in unison.
We can do anything we want to do if it's legal and moral.
That's right. Good attitude. Very good attitude.
Got to put time and energy in it. You got to do your homework.
That's right. I'm gonna ask you. Do you agree with me when I say there's no reason why you, if you want something bad enough, you can get it. You can go out and get it if you want it bad enough.
I've been able to get whatever I wanted.
Okay. Well, that's perfect example.
Of course, I don't want everything.
Yeah, but it's just what you focus on.
I use logic and what I ask for. But anything I ever wanted, I've been able to get it. I've been very blessed.
Well, yeah, blessed and innocent.
And also,
mindset.
I like to say that they failed me in the first grade. I went to Catholic school. They failed me in the first grade. And then when I got to Champion in the seventh grade, they put me in a retarded class. And the first day in class, Johnny Red ran down the hallway and put his head right to the wall. And I said, oh, my God, how'd I get in here? And once you get in there, they ain't letting you out. So then when I got to the 12th grade, I went to a white school because I was thinking I could get a better education there, but it wasn't true. The white people didn't care about me. They didn't want me there. They were afraid I might intermingle with their daughters, so they didn't even want me there. But at the black schools, the black teachers knew what to teach me and what to prepare me, and they loved me, and they were really on my side. But at the time, I didn't know that. But anyway, then I go to Ohio State. Ohio State was a land-grant school. They had to take you, but they didn't have to keep you. Now it's a corporate school. They don't even have to take you. It started off to be a – they just switched to corporations, then took over. Corporations have more rights than people.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that got you on that focus of accomplishing? You had did you have any parents?
Sir, his name was H.B. Ward. He ran the Ohio Daycare Center.
Mm-hmm.
He got educated in New England and came here. And he taught me everything. And he taught all the kids that went there everything. He would go out and teach us ham radio. He would teach me carpentry, teach me plumbing. Not only me, but everybody who came through there. And then he would get people to come there like the dentist doctor. He would come there and he would give everybody free examinations and stuff like that. And then he said, well, if you get a letter at in the half mile, I'll buy you a leather sweater. So I got me a letter and he bought me the sweater. He gave me my first clarinet. From clarinet, I went from clarinet to cello to baritone saxophone. He told me to go to Boston. I ended up in Boston. Boston's a tremendous place to get education, not to live there and raise a family, but to go there and get an education and then come back home and use that education. What we done in Columbus, they'd already did in Boston 30 years before. So when I came to Columbus, I already knew the scoop. I already knew what was going to happen. So that's how I was ahead of the game. We lived in South Boston. They were going to redevelop it, but when they redeveloped, they displaced all the indigenous people that were there, and then when they got done redevelopment, the people who lived there couldn't afford to come back and buy lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I could have bought a brownstone house there for $3,000 to $5,000. I go back 20 years later, they're selling the basement for $125,000, the second floor for $200,000, the third floor. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it evolves.
So I saw that in Boston, and the same thing happened here 25 years later. It probably started out in California near the Russian Creek.
Yep, it did.
Where it started, and with the gays out there, and it just spread it.
But
that's my history. That's my take on it.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. You got a lot to give, to put out there, to give a person something to think about because, again, look at your life, okay? And, I grew up in West Fresno in California, Fresno, California. And like I said, and I've written a book on Strive to Arrive. It's the name of my latest book. But it goes to show you whatever you focus on and entertain, that's what you gain. That's my saying. And you just said you went to different colleges. You experienced different cities.
I went to one, Ohio State.
Okay,
I went to a lot of places. To learn
yeah,
plumbing.
A lot of places. That's what I'm saying. Main thing, but you
and I
you learned
out.
Through. But don't you think you learned a lot through going to those places?
I learned a lot through it. You learn through experience. You learn by doing. You learn
right.
by putting yourself in situations. I've learned more through volunteering, giving up my time and energy. Mm-hmm. You know, you can meet millionaires through volunteering. You can meet
sure.
all kinds of people that you would never. I used to volunteered for the Quakers. We would do weekend workshops where they bring in college kids and high school kids. We come together, and then we go out in the community and paint somebody's poor people's house or teach kids, computer kids or whatever. But through volunteering, I learned.
I agree with that. And that's, I think, the problem today is that we as people feel that everything we do, we got to get paid for. It's got to be paid. But there's different ways of getting paid, you know, is what you, the way you perceive it.
And right, also, we shouldn't be afraid of being entrepreneurs. I was in Africa, and in 97, that's where I got the name Chief. They made me a chief. I went back to Oshobo, Nigeria, and I told them, I said, I forgive you for selling me in slavery. And they said, oh, no, you can't talk about that. So they had newspapers and people to record me there, and they played it on the newspaper, on the radio station. And then they were having a civil war about 12 miles away, and they asked me if I wanted to go see it, and I said, oh, no. Anyway, they made me go. And what they do is they fight every other day, and they start fighting after 9 o'clock. And they fight in a very unusual way. It's unbelievable. They use juju or voodoo or whatever you want. They had this old lady. She just had an inner tube tied around her, and they would try and shoot her with these M16s, and the bullets wouldn't touch her. And then she would take a chair and throw at them, and maybe 20 of them would die. I mean, unbelievable. You have to see it.
Yeah.
So I told them, I forgave them for selling me in slavery, and I ain't got no hard feelings because I'm over here in America with all this material. Mm-hmm. Well, I probably live better than, we over here probably live better than 60% of the people around the world, if you count everybody around the world. So
right.
I'm forgiving, but they, you know, but anyway, it's good to travel. It's good to see how other people live. I went to Canada one time in 75 to work on Irving Oil Refinery as a pipe fitter. We brought in welders from all around the world, Africa, England. The best welders were from Trinidad. They were trained. They were the best welders. And I had a chance to work with them, so I learned a lot from them.
Yeah,
and the other world.
Experiences, like you mentioned, you need the experience. Oh yeah.
Don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good. Life is beautiful.
Enjoy each and every moment.
No, go ahead on.
I was going to ask him this to contain to you, Albert, Chief, in Columbus. Are there opportunities available for to pick up property? It could be could have a house on it, could be a vacant lot. To still pick up discounted properties in Columbus or those or that boat?
Sure, it's possible. They even have a property in land bank. City's grabbing up all this property, and they put it in a land bank. And you can get the property out of the land bank, and there's still houses to get, but you know,
it's true.
It's going up, you know, because
demand.
Everybody's finding out about it. People are going. But
okay.
There's still deals to be made.
Well, we had a question off of Facebook, and that's DOC. It says, or ask Chief about freedom of speech. Now, hold on, let me make sure I'm saying this right. I guess she's asking, were you allowed to exercise your freedom of speech? I hope I phrased that like she said. Question off the Facebook.
Of course. Anybody can say what they want to say. They may be penalized for it, for saying it. You may get fired or lose your job. But I was a union plumber. It was hard for them to tell somebody to fire me. And if they did, I could sue, or I can go to the union hall and get another job. So, and then the unions paid, as a union plumber, I made a good salary. I made a good wage, a wage you could live off of.
Okay.
So unions are good.
Now, she also asked on Facebook, what year or years were you in environmental court?
I can't remember. I don't know.
But the movie Flag Wars was released in 2003.
Okay.
So I imagine around, I don't know, what, 2000, 1999, somewhere around there? But it was released in 2000. I don't know how long it took them to edit it and all that other stuff.
I don't know.
I'll
be 68 in May, so, you know, stuff just, it happened, but I don't keep record. It kind of blends together, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the big picture. I don't all the time see the little details. Some people are good at that, and some people are good at other things. But it was probably, I don't know, probably 12 years ago, 14 years ago.
Right, right. It's been a bit. All right, now this person keeps on coming. All right, she's asking, in court, and that's what I'm saying, people need to watch the film Flag Wars. Did you exercise your freedom of speech? Now, from my point of view, I've watched the film three times. You did, but I'm not you, so.
Yeah,
I think you just answered it. Yeah, all right.
I do
okay.
It everywhere I go. I mean, I know my limitations.
Hello.
You know what I mean?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, now we can hear you. Yes, we can hear you. Yeah.
Okay.
We can hear you.
I can't talk loud. What I want to know, I want discussion here. I know that we can watch the movie, but we have him here now, and I want to know, I want the hearers to, the listeners to know, because you went to court, you had to obey, you had to do all of that, and I want to hear you talk about, did you exercise your freedom of speech, and what happened when you tried to use that approach to fight your defense? That's what I want to hear on the air. I have to go. I can't wake up everybody.
Yes, I use my freedom of speech, and I use it all the time. I never had any problems. When you tell the truth or what you believe to be true, it's all right. You know, you can do that.
Okay, meaning what I'm saying is they kept telling you, you can't. There was something about you couldn't do this or something with your property, okay? And basically, use art to make your statement. But I'm wondering if you had stood on the argument of your freedom of speech, if that would have been a valid argument for you in court while you were in court.
I didn't claim I should be able to hang my sign due to freedom of speech. No,
yeah,
I didn't go that way.
I hung it because
it's my house, it's my name. The sign says, Chi Shango Obadina di Oboboga a Iliwo Ijise. When I went to Africa and they made me a chief, they said, go home and put your name up on the door so people know who you are, and if they know they can come to you if they feel they you can be of service to them. So I did that.
Yeah.
And that's up there.
That's what I'm saying. Because guess what? We can put our names on our house. You know how people have their names on their house?
Yeah.
And things like that. But I heard you say, I hope I don't wake these people up. I'm so crazy over here. I heard you say, you know, it's my house. I own it. I should be able to do what I want. I'm in that same position with my radio stations. I'm unlicensed because I refuse to be told how I can play my music on something that I pay for. I pay out of my pocket for the streams, for the music to play on it, all that. And so for them to come and tell me how I can play it on my equipment that I own, on my stream that I pay for, but with you, I was just wondering, yeah, because I think that if you had to win in court and says, you know what, I got freedom of speech, and argued that, they wouldn't have been able to mess with you too much. But, you know, I don't know. I've got... I think outside the box, and so.
I didn't think of that, and I didn't try that approach. Freedom of speech.
Well, let me chime in on that. You can say what you want to say, but particularly when you go back and watch this movie, and even if you don't watch this movie, the judge, when you get in front of that judge, he's focusing on that narrow issue of law. That's why we have more people, regardless of race, creed, whatever. This is civics 101. What is the function of a judge? And when you get in front of that judge, he's just concerned with this particular narrow issue that's before him, nothing else. So you can say what you want to say, but if you, as Chief talked about at the beginning of this program, if you really want to have exercise your freedom, you need to get ahead of the ball. And like he said, learn a system, form your own think tanks, special interest groups, political action groups, whatever you want to call it, and get in on the process at the beginning of the conversation. So any rule or regulation or ordinance that you think might be unfair today can be changed. So, because basically the judge, to his hands to a certain degree, it's tied. So we have to look at the system, how the system works, and if you want to exercise the freedom of speech, instead of being reactive, as Chief said, if find a think tank, if it isn't one, create one, and get politically involved, because if you don't, that then your neighborhood or even your home could go, it'll be a footnote in history.
And I don't really consider myself politically involved. I don't consider myself a politician. Me personally, I don't. You know, I don't. That's not a system for me. But maybe what I am doing is political. I don't know, but I don't see it as that, and I don't call it that.
Well, it compared to I consider it's being political as compared to, because for instance, a week ago today, and I wasn't even thinking about it's my house or nothing like that. A week ago today, I was in the process of sitting in a bullpen in a D.C. jail waiting to be released. It took the judge signed the order in a day. I spent 7 days in jail for contempt of court based on a cabinet, a brand new kitchen cabinet in my house, which I did not want painted. The code inspector said I needed to have it painted or stained, but I like the nice fresh wood look, and I just bought it from what they call Home Depot, installed as per whatever, and it was set nicely and all that. I mean, we're talking about a simple kit, 7 days in jail. So, and then I'm thinking, you know what, now I got a squatter in here.
Was it worth it?
Something's wrong with this picture. Huh?
Was it worth it, the 7 days?
Looking
Did you
back,
paint the cabinets? Still unpainted.
No, well, it was painted shortly after I got released. But that wasn't the
thing. That's why I said
for,
it's worth it. You didn't have to go to jail. You could have painted before they put you in jail. And at the same time, they sell those cabinets unpainted so you can buy them cheaper. You have to put some kind of finish on them. If you don't, the oil from your skin, each time you touch where you're going to open the cabinet up, it's going to have your stain on it. So,
well,
you should paint it, or you should put some.
Yeah,
anyway.
The problem I had at the time. Yeah, the problem I had with it was that, number one, there was no ordinance on the books. There's nothing.
You don't need no ordinance.
Department of Regulatory. It was simply a judgment call.
If
it's my house. It's my house.
Yeah.
And see, all this was being orchestrated. See, the person that was playing the symphony in this was basically
a
squatter. No.
Did you rent the house out?
The house was not, and this is not a rental property. We're talking about a person that will not leave the house. It was not a rental property.
Well, that's how you got caught. I had a witch from hell in my house. Somebody did it to me, And I told her not to make any long distance calls, and she did. It was 300. I had to go to court to get her out. In the meantime, she did a lot of damage.
Well, see, this is what I'm working towards with this program. It's I want to get involved. Yeah,
why you let her in there?
I want to get involved. Huh? She came in there on an expense agreement. There was never rent. The expense agreement is you pay your, you know, utilities, the cable, your internet. Because at that time, I was living outside of D.C. for about 6 months out of the year. I wasn't even
okay, you learned from that.
So
you learned from
huh?
that. You can't do that. It's always
well, with this, well, I've learned a whole lot since then. But one of the things I learned, and here's what I'm talking about, going back to the kitchen cabinets, okay, whether you think they should be stained, painted, or whatever, I think a person should have a legal right that if a person will not leave your home willingly, and I'm not talking because this was not a rental property, okay, we have no lease agreement, never had one, okay.
How long
this
was she there?
I knew.
How long did you let her
she
stay
was
there?
She was there.
How long?
The agreement.
You over there
18
2 days.
Months. 18 months.
Well, that's a
no,
she's...
18 months.
That's
or, no,
her
no.
house.
The agreement, her name's not on the deed.
And listen,
she's not paying the tax.
It's like wrestling. For every move, there's a counter move. But you gotta get out of that. You got to get out.
Well,
you got to implement that counter move before they put you in locked position. So
well,
you got
what
in
I'm
locked
saying.
Position.
Well,
once you get in locked position, then there's already a prescribed challenge.
But here's what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying.
To go through.
Here's what I'm saying. Okay.
Waste
if
time
your
talking
name
about
is
this,
on
brother.
The deed, if your name is on the deed,
that ain't the
okay.
way it works.
Well, no, it works that way for hotels and motels. It works that way for hotels and motels. And that's where I'm going back. With the law, if you get
out
in front of the
law. You ain't no motel.
No, but here's what I'm saying. The reason why it's not that way with a hotel or motel is because the, and I'm talking about a simple Roach motel, okay, is because the Roach motel owners on a local level, and it's not that many of them compared to homeowners, got together, got a think tank together, got a political organization together, got access to the local politicians and
you
the
can do
legal
the
system.
Thing, but it ain't worth energy, in my opinion.
Well, no.
For that.
I do. I think it is worth it because people, we've had another guest on this show. She went away and she came back. Her name is Heidi Peterson. Her video went viral on the internet. She came back home from Russia, and a lady was squatting in her house. The woman had, first thing, trespassing is a criminal offense. Breaking entrance is a criminal offense. She got a fraudulent lien against the house for a water bill that the squatter broke in and ran it up. I think that you should not have to go to put up, if you want a person out of your home, I think there should be a law in the books that you, like a hotel, you should be able to put them out and impound their stuff and get rid of it. Now, the
you
only
get
way
them
that's going to happen.
Hours. They move in the day, you got to get them out that day.
Well,
I mean, you can
again,
throw
in
shit,
the case,
you can throw them out quickly. You can throw their stuff out in the street. You got to do it that day.
All right. If in Washington, D.C., in Washington, D.C.
Before they say they can be, they rent there, they're a squatter or whatever, you got to get them out right away.
Listen, in Washington, D.C., if you do this, what you just said, I know a guy who got fined $10,000 for that.
How long was the person there before he did anything?
I don't know how long they were there.
It was longer than a day.
Well, it was longer than a day, I'm sure. But
yeah,
still,
squatters
if
have
you,
rights.
If squatters I don't believe
rights.
They should, well, put it this way, and or but I believe put it this way, depending particularly in urban cities, because I know of a case in San Francisco. You got two landlords, husband and wife team, that owned a five unit, they're doing a 4-year prison sentence. So what I'm saying is this, okay, what the basic property homeowner in this country needs to do, I'm not even getting into the landlord part of this, but what the basic property owner in this country needs to do, okay, because they think, all right, I bought the house, I paid the taxes, I cut the grass, and the show's over. No, it ain't over. Because there are a number of ways, because I like what you said, you know your history. And that's everybody. Know the history of the city, the neighborhood, how land has changed people's hands. We use the term called housejacking on this show quite frequently because there are many ways to do it. And what I'm saying is, and I'm agreeing with you this, you people need to become aware of the political landscape and get involved with it on the front end. So if it's your house and you don't want kitchen cabinets, I think there's something really crazy to spend 7 days in jail and a person is in the house with no water running and they have a child in there for 30 days and the water's not on. They don't call child protection. Something, in my opinion, in my little tiny corner of the universe, I think something's wrong with that picture.
However,
there are plenty of places to go, but that's another show. But what I'm saying is, in order for me to change, that's why I put this show together as a first step, because there are other people. I mean, there's a lady in D.C. The Washington Post did an expose on this last year. A 95-year-old woman with Alzheimer's loses her house that was valued at over $333,000 for less than $50. The woman's got Alzheimer's, man. So, like you said, that's why I'm saying the typical homeowner or people related to people that might be up in age, because it's not, and I've said this on the show too, it's not a question of if you'll get attacked. It's when, and you need to be prepared by educating yourself on the local landscape, how things work. You know, like in the case of flag wars, you know, they went, part of the thing is they set up an environmental court. And another thing that they set up was the historical commission or whatever you want to call it, the preservation thing. So they basically used the tools that were already in place. However, certain people, for whatever reason, were not aware of it or didn't get involved. You set a good example of, okay, you got involved with the system, you were, you know, through this sign thing, and then you became proactive in order to protect your interests. Because my definition of politics is, this is my definition, it's the art and science of protecting your interests. That's, for me, that's the bottom line. So, the way you felt about that sign, that's the way I felt about the cabinet. You're right about the staining it and the painting it and all that. However, my problem was, I think it's totally crazy that an outsider, a government official who's being played by a squatter, who in my opinion is a leech in society, but I found out the only way that I can change that is get involved, educate myself on the system, and get involved with the system. Because if it's not that, it's going to be another way. So it'll be another way. You know, because they burned down neighborhoods.
I'm standing in my kitchen, and I'm looking at my cabinets, and I did the same thing you do. I brought those cabinets, and I didn't paint them. So that's how I know what I'm talking about. I can see where my hands are.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. Hey,
bring this to the attention. That's the only difference there. Had you not let them in your house,
and live there.
If I had a crystal,
if
I had a crystal ball, you know, if I had a crystal ball on what could have happened, but, you know, I'm looking at it because, like I said, what I've done is basically this. I flipped the whole situation into a Zen situation. In other words, I'm not looking at this person as a demon. I said, basically, all right, this is a Zen master because basically I got the radio program. We're starting out format-based radio stations based on various issues dealing with this topic. You know, I got a clothing line behind it. I got a female clothing line we're about to introduce. So I basically flipped the whole thing because I have a personal philosophy. When you go through something like this, it's an opportunity. You're in the middle of an opportunity, and you're in the middle of a miracle. You might not understand it. So now I understand what has happened. So part of this, like I say, is the law. I'm looking at the law is, although I believe you have a lot of sociopaths and psychopaths involved with this, okay, however, the law is like a piece of clay. So, because you've mentioned this early in the show, too. When you went to the meeting about the sign, one of the meetings about the sign, you were ambushed by a small group of people. We're talking about 5 or 6 people. So one of the things is, like what you said, is why I want you to have your show. Well, you know, now at your place, you know, you have think tanks. You know, it's Miles, the radio program and stuff that we might do offline in other cities. The think tanks basically, because we're not screaming racism, we're talking about here's the system. And the system is part of life. And in life, things change. If anybody's played organized sports, in organized sports, the rules change every season. They're little minor things, but the rules change. Okay, one high-profile example using sports was when Lou Alcindor was called, well, when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in high school was called Lou Alcindor, they outlawed the slam dunk. And they did it on a college level, too. Okay, then he developed the sky hook. Well, that's a rule, but they have rule changes before that did that, and they had it during that period, and they had it after that. That's just the nature of life. Change, 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 change. I mean, when we can't wear the same clothes that we had when we were 1 or 2 years old. So using that framework when it comes to a person's personal residence, I'm advocating this, okay, look. This isn't about racism, okay? Here are the laws, and if you see a particular law, regulation, or ordinance that you don't like, okay, and for me, the trigger was this squatter who just kept on manipulating the system. So I found out that essentially that's what I have to do is learn the system. And then go from there.
At the same time, the people who are forming these groups are people just like you and me. To give you an example, out in California, they're starting to make olive oil. So there's a group of people that got together to promote their own interests. They want to say what constitute pure virgin olive oil. Now, they're trying to set. They're getting that from Europe for years, but now they want to be able to say what the standards are. And they're just new on the block. They're just learning how to make olive oil, but they want to say what the standard is, so they can block out some of the say that some of the what has already been qualified in by Europe's standards is no longer qualified. So it's just regular people who get together, have their think tanks organized, and work their connections to bring about change. So just as these people before us have gotten together to bring about change, people like us can get together and create organizations or groups or whatever to help bring about change for our interest. So we can do the same thing. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. I agree 1,000%. That's why I had you on the show. Now, another part that I would like to bring about, and this was on the show, the film Flag Wars, is, and maybe Elphick can comment on this too, the young lady, Miss Mitchell, who is no longer with us, Linda Regina Mitchell, her father or her parents left her, I guess, and her brother. I would say that was a mansion chief. It's a pretty large house.
It's still there and it's still empty.
Okay. Here's something I'm putting out to people who have kids and grandkids, and even if you don't have kids and grandkids right at this moment, I think something, we're going to bring this up on the show as well as have attorneys that specialize in this, on this, is estate planning. You know, if you have a house, because this was a pretty large house that Ms. Mitchell had, what kind of asset plan do you have or will you put in place for the maintenance and repairs and the paying taxes for future generations to come? That's called estate planning.
That's good if you're affluent, but most people can't even maintain it and pay for it while they're alive, let alone after they're dead and gone.
Well, the first step is education. First step is education, because you purchased a house. I mean, somewhere along the line, you had the opportunity, you learn how to pick up that house for $200. Okay. And, I mean, from what I can tell about you from not only the film, but just in this conversation, in our previous conversations offline, is you're constantly seeking information and knowledge. And you're out there, you know, getting your experiences in. So I'm saying, I mean, because, for instance, the idea of the forming your own think tank, okay, right in a person's neighborhood, that, I mean, I love that idea, and here's why I love it. It's not a new idea. However, there's a lot of neighborhood associations all across the United States.
Join them and be a part of them.
But many
I'm part
of them,
mine in my neighborhood. They would used to dictate
them,
to me. I'm dictating.
Yeah,
but at the same
time,
the city came and took away a lot of our powers, because the city council did, and took away our real power. They said, you got too much power. You can't be stopping these white businessmen from doing what they want to do. So on surface, we have the power, but in reality, we really don't, because they can always go around us.
Well, that, like I say, that's the nature of change, because, like I say, if you got
I tell you
one
what,
law.
Can I say something?
Yeah, yeah.
Can
yeah,
I say
problem.
Something?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I was 10 years homeless, and I didn't have any money. I didn't have any power. I had nothing. And I had to go, and I had to effect change where nothing just was not happening. And where they go around you and they take your power, well, I just kept plugging around, and I went around them. And I kept getting my power back in some kind of way. I don't know
right.
if I'm missing anything that makes any sense. But one thing that I found, just like they take their laws and they use code enforcement, well, guess what? I bet you if somebody had been sitting down there at that law library, they would have been able to find some RCW, some code or something, and it would have successfully argued you're using, you know, your name on your building. I may not be saying it right, but you know, and because that's what they do. They go in there and they search the laws, and they will pull out old regulations that they're not even enforcing anymore, and use that to take our power away. So this is what's happening when we say they'll just go around us. They're not just going around us. They're just going back to their books, and they're pulling out old things they can use, and we can do the same thing. I always say we need to have a team. We need to have a team on our team. I don't care what team you're on. You need to have somebody down there in the law libraries, just reading those books, and just getting familiar with the code so that we can successfully argue whatever we may endure. And you need to have that on a permanent basis, not on a when you get in trouble.
I agree.
In a sense. We need
I
that.
Agree.
So.
Right. I agree. Because change, it's a simple visit, like Robin said. Basically, both of you are saying the same thing. It's a simple visit to your local library, which has the city code and the laws and the statutes on a city level, state level, and federal level, right in most, if not all, public libraries, and here in the United States. So that's a simple thing that most people don't do. And like you said, if you have in the neighborhood associated meetings that I've attended in D.C., Baltimore, Pittsburgh, okay, those people, but that's only three cities. There's a lot of cities in the United States. For some reason, those people have been on the reactive end, and for some reason, and a lot of these people are college educated and sent their kids to private schools and all this other stuff, for some reason, they've overlooked that simple little piece. However, in the age of the internet, okay, with shows like this, with films like Flag Wars, with people out there like Robin and Chief Barber, that I found out about through Flag Wars, I think we can turn the tables on that. And like I said, it needs to be an all permanent, ongoing thing, think tank, special interest group, whatever you call it, to keep up on it, because it really is an ongoing thing, because change always changes. So it's not, that's the way it is. Like I said, my definition of politics is the art and science of protecting your own interests. And part of that is getting up on, what the laws is. Like I said, in my case, I don't like the power, because essentially one of the things I've learned is this. I can go to any area of town, any city that I want to, and I basically know how to go in and essentially hijack somebody's house. Now, in some cases, I might get arrested, but I can pick out cities where I probably won't even get arrested. Won't even get arrested. Probably won't even get investigated.
I've learned.
There are other cities that I will. Matter of fact, in most cities, I've learned how basically a person, we'll talk about this on the show too, how I basically can refinance somebody's house and never even set foot in the town. So, like I said, for me to think outside the box, I literally travel outside the box. So I found out, because the term housejacking actually came from Africa, South Africa, because you had people at one time in South Africa who became millionaires from squatting. But the building owners got together, got laws on the books through think tanks and all this, discussions like this, like you said, Chief, ordinary people, and got the laws changed. Now in South Africa, if you say building hijacking, just like carjacking, everybody knows what it is. People go to jail every day behind it. People go to prison every day behind it. Prosecutors know about it. You call the police know about it and come and pick somebody up and get them arrested. However, in many of your urban cities here in the United States, the way the laws are now, that's not the case. The person who's squatting, or you could have a disingenuous code enforcement officer. I have a problem with a code enforcement officer who is a licensed real estate agent. So here's a person that can basically make me bankrupt and enlist my property at a fireside. I got a problem with that. However, a bitch fest is not going to fix the problem. Marching is not going to fix the problem. Process is not going to fix the problem. It's me getting involved with a think tank, getting some other homeowners together who are going through the same pain or agree with me, and then we get involved in the process. So, like you said, Chief, we make the decision. Because it's there, we can do that. Or either that, or move to a remote area when you don't have to deal with all this, which is my other
there comes
move.
Well, you know, people been stealing property and since the beginning of the time, you know.
Right.
So,
yep. They have.
Just something we.
Well, the truth. They have been. I mean, they call them in our history books. They call them explorers, great explorers, and great conquerors. But Genghis Khan, bottom line, was a land grabber, a thief. Okay. The United States government stole over 90 million acres. You know what? Let me correct myself. It's not the United States government. And here's something I want people to learn. You have to look at the law. Who went to whatever politicians to get a law introduced? See, like you said, Chief, you're right. Ordinary people can do the exact same thing. So ordinary people went to the congressmen and senators in way back when or whatever and basically got legislation passed. And that's how 90 million acres of land got transferred over to another person. We'll talk about this in future shows. Eminent domain. A lot of people think that eminent domain is, you know, for the greater good, like if a hospital or library needs to be built here or whatever. And No. A common everyday person, a person with absolutely no financial resources, can essentially use the many morphisms of eminent domain to get your house. And the zoning code, the building code is one way to do it. So in order to protect your interests, you need to know about the code, the fundamentals of it, how these agencies work, how the mayor's office works to protect yourself. And if you don't like something, like I said, get involved. Form a think tank, and Chief said it, ordinary people. The woman who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MAD, she was an ordinary mother, ordinary parent. Her daughter got killed by a drunk driver. The judge handed out a light sentence. She didn't have any money or resources or political connections. Very Josephine Average. That's not a real name, but I'm just making a point. And she got mad for Mothers Against Drunk Driving and met other parents who were going through the same thing. And 2 years later, she had 90 chapters around the United States. Last year, they took in like $45 million. All started with an ordinary person. 50% of the legislation that gets passed on the federal level comes from grassroots organizations. So that's what we want to encourage you on It's My House. If you have any housing issue as a private property rights owner, that's a regular homeowner, or small landlord, if you don't like the way zoning's going, if you don't like dealing with squatters, if you don't like the ordinance about cutting your grass, whatever it might be, because everybody has different interests, make a trip to the local library and then also meet other people that have your pain. And then sit down with your mayor at the mayor's office if you can. Call your local councilman or alderman. Get to know the system. Oh, and another thing you brought up, Chief, which I really like. You said have a conversation with your enemy. So whoever you perceive to be your enemy can actually give you some good ideas. And then
yeah,
you have some
dialogue. Relationship. And you
like,
gain
relationship
from one another eventually. And
exactly. So I really
goes.
Like that. Have a conversation with your enemy. Anyway, let me get off my soapbox here. So going back to Flag Wars, Chief, now I've mentioned her name a couple of times on here, Ms. Mitchell. Now, she eventually passed. I guess some of the, because she was having to go to court, and I guess a lot of this was stressing her out.
Had something to do with the shortness of her life. It was very stressful for her. She didn't have the resources to do what they were asking her to do, and they were bringing her back and forth to court. I know it was stressful because as affluent as I am, it was stressful for me. So
right.
I can see that. And, yeah, it was sad when she died. I
right.
was there.
Yeah, they documented that, too. Now, Chief, within a one-square-mile radius of, let's say, where Miss Mitchell's house was, or is, still, because it's still standing.
It's still standing.
How many churches would you say are within that one-square-mile radius of that where her, you know, family is?
How many churches?
Yeah.
How many churches?
Just a guesstimate. Just a guesstimate. One-square-mile radius of that house.
At least 10.
Okay.
Yeah, at least 10.
I'm putting this out there because most people listen to this broadcast on demand. I'm suggesting that people out there that listen to this broadcast, I believe, now this is L.A. speaking, a lot of the ministries that a lot of these faith-based organizations have, which they serve their purpose. I'm not knocking that. I'm not judging. But I think you need to add on a housing ministry, for lack of a better term, because you do have your seniors in need of help with some code violation stuff. You do have some people of any age, like Miss Mitchell, I think, was only 39 years old when she passed. And if you look at the film Flag Wars, I mean, I call that place like it's a mansion, or at least a mini mansion. And she
yes,
was sick. She was sick. She was going back and forth to court, I think. One time she got incarcerated.
Didn't have gas, didn't have running water. She didn't have heat. I went
right.
and did some plumbing for her.
Yeah, you did some plumbing. That's documented in the film. And I think, now, but Chief Bob is only one man. Okay. So with the guesstimated 10 churches, and this is in any community, I'm not picking on Columbus. This is particularly in any urban community around the globe. I think that somebody should, you know, particularly these people that think, you know, I'm trying to think of a ministry. Start a housing ministry. Because there are people that are going to these churches, particularly a lot of these mega churches, and they're praying for an answer on how I can get my roof fixed, how I can get my water cut back on. The law is the law. Okay? So, like, Chief told you how, during this broadcast, he told you how to get in front of this thing. And that's what we have to do. We have to get in front of it. Okay? Think tanks is one major step to get in front of this stuff. Robin mentioned this needs to be ongoing. And this needs to be within families. You know, what is the legacy plan? If I pass, because we all will, we have to die to get out of life, what kind of legacy plan do we have in place to take care of, to prevent the water from getting shut off, to make sure 50 years, 100 years from now, that the taxes get paid? What kind of assets do we need to set up now that'll produce a cash flow to keep this estate going? So we need to really think about these aspects of these mindsets. Yes.
As affluent as I am, I'm faced with the same problem. I'm running a nonprofit art gallery since 75, and when I go, I don't know who's going to take it over. We as black people, we have this welfare mentality. We think everything should be given to us. You get what you work for, what you earn. Does nobody owe us anything? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They don't owe us.
Right.
Sure, our ancestors were just slaves, but we can't. Nobody really owes us. We have to get out there and get it ourselves. We have to work for what we want. We have to think about what we want and organize to get what we want.
Right.
So we have responsibility also.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you said earlier, too. It's up to us to know our history, and it's our responsibility to know that as well. Now, I want to divert quickly to something, because you are a plumber, and I'm in the solar energy, renewable energy, and all this, and this fits into this housing ministry idea. Chief, do you know anything about rain harvesting?
About what?
Rain harvesting.
Well, we do that at our gallery. We have 50-gallon drums that are tied together, and we collect rainwater from the roofs, and then we water the plants throughout the summer with it. I do that at both of my houses. I also gone to Germany five times in the last 7 years, and I studied what they do in terms of solar energy and geothermal energy, and they're well ahead of us. We're on a disposable society here. We make things only for temporarily, and then we throw them away, and then we have to replace it. But I find in Europe, they'll do it right the first time and let it last 100 years, so they don't have to keep spending the same resources over and over. Like here, we use a lot of cement and we use a lot of blacktop, but over in Germany, they use bricks. I said, why you guys use bricks? They said the earth has to breathe. They can breathe through the cracks of the bricks, but if you put blacktop down, it can't breathe. So that's why the blacktop is going to constantly, and the cement is going to constantly break so the earth can breathe. So they use a lot of bricks, and they use a lot of stainless steel, whereas we use stuff that ain't going to last. But that's part of the system, because the people who are in charge constantly want to keep making money. So they make the product to last a certain amount of time because they know you're going to have more. It's just like these phones. They come out with something new every 6 months to make you buy a new phone.
Right, functional obsolescence, that's what they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have to call that in consideration also.
Now, you brought up something, because we have some similarities here. I spent quite a bit of time in Europe, particularly Germany. And that's where I picked up solar energy and renewable energy. Now, I'm getting back to this rainwater thing, because you mentioned this lady didn't have any running water. Now, I don't know what the zoning ordinance is there, but here's what I'm thinking about is, let's say, something that we can put into action, which we want to encourage on this program, is because I know on a typical roof, and she had a big roof, about 42,000 gallons of water hits the typical roof in the course of a year. Okay, a lot of that can be basically recycled into rainwater with it. Like, for instance, I'm here in Florida. I'm off the grid when it comes to water. Okay, now we use a well, but I'm getting ready to install by the end of the year, a rainwater system as a backup, because one day the well will run dry. But we filter the water through a reverse osmosis system. I understand that things out there better than that. But anyway, what I'm getting at, Chief, is this. Is it possible that you can organize a workshop, and we can probably even morph it into a webcast on rainwater harvesting, because, like, depending on the urban area, people can use this as a viable tool, so they will not, they'll have running water, but they don't have to rely on the city for running water. Because if you get it from, because basically the city gets their water from us anyway. Storm water that is not harvested off our own properties runs into the sewer, and it makes its way through the network of sewer streets, or whatever you want to call them, underground, to the water station, and then they do their thing to it, and then they sell it back to us. But if people had a rainwater system on their home, and I learned about this in Germany too, Chief, then, you know, that's one bill that they wouldn't have to be worried about. Now, some cities are ahead of the curb on this, where they have special ordinances on the books. But for the most part in the United States, you know, this is something that people can still do to eliminate their water bill, rainwater harvesting. So is it, I'd like to get together with you and have a workshop on that.
Some parts of the country, the city claims that the water that comes off your roof is their water also. So
yeah,
that.
Well, they won't allow you to do that, and then there's some cities don't want to make sure you don't have a backflow connection, whereas your water is able to get into their system. So it all needs to be separated. Mm. And then the rainwater, you're going to have a way to, depending on if you're going to use it as portable water, then you have to have ways to filter it. And then there's some ways where you can just have it to use it in your toilets or like that, where you aren't actually drinking it, but you're using it to clean with.
Right, exactly.
So all these,
well,
we can investigate.
So we can have a workshop on that, because you make a good point that so there, people that have Netflix, it might be on YouTube, there's a documentary called Blue Gold, because water, depending on how it's packaged, is actually more expensive than gasoline. A lot of people don't know that. But water is called Blue Gold, and I highly recommend that documentary. And there's a James Bond movie called The Quantum of Solace, and that essentially, that movie is essentially about water rights. And that's James Bond working for MI6 or 5, whatever you call it, for the throne. And he's trying to prevent somebody from taking over water rights. It, don't look at this as pure entertainment. There's whoever put that out there, there's a method to their madness on that one. So Blue Gold, I recommend that one, because one of the things that we're going to have to be faced with is, and Chief, you brought it up, in some cities already, the rain that falls out of the sky, they've written up in that particular community, well, you can't do what you want with it.
Right.
So if you want that change, and like you said, Chief, it's regular folk that's doing this. It's regular folk. So I don't know what community. In my community here in Polk County, it's, you know, we're off the grid, no big deal, because you have a community of people, because you have a lot of snowbirds that live down here, people from up north in Canada, whatever. So that's how we're able to do stuff down here that you might not be able to do in some other place. However, you know, as water gets more precious, and it is already precious in other parts of the world, a lot of us see it, take it for granted. But I'd like to put together a workshop with you, Chief, on that, so we can educate people on water. What are their water rights? How to find out what their water rights are, and how to lower or eliminate their water bill legally. You were saying, Chief?
At the same time, we have to think of fracking, where they're destroying the water. They're pumping poisons and chemicals, and it's getting into our water system. But the mentality today is, let me get my wealth today now, not think about the future generations, or let me poison the water in Kentucky and live in Florida where I'm not even affected by it. So we have
right.
to begin to deal with that type of mentality in this capitalistic society, or whatever you want to call it, but you know, we have to
psychopathic.
We have to be our brother's keepers. We have to be better stewards of the land than what we are. We're the
right.
biggest danger to the survival of Earth. We, the human beings, not the animals or whatever. We're creating all these.
And speaking of water, rainwater in particular, Chief, and anybody listening. There's a young man out of Kenya, Africa, and I love to get a lot of my business ideas out of Africa and Southeast Asia. They're ahead of the curve, folks, in my opinion, on a lot of things. But there's this guy out of Kenya. He's got a company called Skydrops. And we're talking about an ordinary Joe, okay? And he basically harvests rainwater, cleans it up with a simple filter, bottles it, and he sells it to his local village. Talk about an entrepreneur. This guy, he's got a basically a billion-dollar formula right there. So there are entrepreneurial opportunities that you can discover out here. And I also like what you said, Chief, earlier about volunteering. Matter of fact, I learned a whole lot about solar and renewable energy basically through renewable energy opportunities. When the light was turned on for me in Germany, because what hit it for me was I saw a friend of mine, her heating bill for the whole year was under 50 euro. That did it for me. Because I immediately said, you know what, that's why people get evicted. That's why people get foreclosed on to a high degree, because of those utility bills equal or surpass what they're paying in rent or mortgage payment. And then I started volunteering for about a 4.5-year, 5-year stretch. I was a demon when it came to volunteering. I volunteered every which way I could. And that's how I learned a whole lot of stuff. I mean, from setting up campaigns, phone banks, installing solar panels, all of it. So, and the thing about volunteering with anything, you're building up such good karma that things are going to come to you that are good that you cannot even anticipate. So,
you're right.
I'm really glad you brought that up, volunteering. So get involved with your community. Now, I think we got a call from the 206. 206-434, you there?
Hey, it's just me. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Chief Barbara, this is Cynthia Andrews. She's in Arizona, and she has a show called Living It Up After 50. And Cynthia, I don't know how much of the show you've listened to, but Barbara, it was in a film, documentary titled Flag Wars, which you can watch that on YouTube for free. And I think a lot of the issues that you might see in the film do affect people, or can affect many people over 50, regardless of, you know, race, creed, color, religion, and all that other stuff. It's a lot of issues in that. Because if you limit it just on a race, then you'll miss the bigger picture of it. So I think Chief's done a very good job of bringing up the larger issues that are basically colorblind. You know, the law and money. And if you don't like something, what you need to do to get to change it. Yeah, Chief.
Today now, I don't think we have to get beyond the race thing. We have to get over that. There was a time for that, but I think to get over that, it's no longer a race thing. We have a black president. We just got a new black president of Ohio State University. We have a black mayor here. We've had a black chief of police. We have black chief of firemen. And at the same time, I know that they are limited as to what they can do because they can't do anything to make the people who put them there upset or anything. But we still have these people like us in these key positions. So we can't keep saying it's a race thing. We have to, because a lot of the whites are getting screwed just like we are, except they don't.
Yeah.
The other whites tell them, we're the problem, we're their problems, and that's why they're getting screwed, so they hate us, but really they're just pawns like we are.
I've run across more white folks that have had their house taken from them or their neighborhoods taken from them, believe it or not, that dwarf black folks. We have a website that's going back up online that shows the videos on it.
Just like there are more white people on welfare than we are, but we're associated with welfare. And the biggest people on welfare are the corporations. They're the ones that really get all the welfare, not the poor man. It's the corporations by getting around not even paying taxes.
Right, I agree. I think the approach that we need to take is, I'm going to use sports as an analogy. it's not really a matter. It's not a matter about race or religion. What it comes down to, because we're all animals here, even in the plant kingdom, in the animal kingdom, because we are animals, it comes down to alpha, dominance. And a David and Goliath situation. David basically didn't have the trappings that Goliath did. However, he found an alpha advantage or a dominant advantage with that slingshot and a stone and an aim and prayer, and he came out on top. So basically what we have to do is just look at this as, when it comes to your property, look at it as a basketball game or a football game or a baseball game. What are the rules of the game? Because you can't play basketball with football rules. Learn the rules of the game. Learn the landscape of the court or the field that you're dealing with. And get your skill set together. Because the same way that we can dominate the NBA, we can dominate any place we choose, we set our mind to dominate. And it starts with getting yourself educated, at least in, when we're talking about in this conversation, private property rights, particularly for people plus, you know, because Cynthia's group, niche, she's a life coach on this, is the 50-plus people. So, Cynthia, anything you want to add into this convo?
No, but it's just kind of ironic that you guys are having this conversation, because I just met some folks who have created this water purifying system that they can take any type of water now and turn it into drinking water and purify it and take it into drinking water, and now they're shipping it around the country to be sold. I actually know the guys who are doing the shipping, but I'm looking forward to learning more about what that system's all about and how much it costs and such, because I know it'll be going overseas eventually, and somehow I want to get in on that process. But I enjoyed listening to what you guys were talking about as far as harvesting your own rainwater. You know, I'm from Seattle, so that's a big deal there. Collecting solar energy and then harvesting your own rainwater, which is something we were going to do with the new building that I was planning to build.
Now, Cynthia, you used to work extensively. You worked for nonprofits, and you worked for a pretty influential church in the past. Going back to this flag wars thing, and I mentioned this earlier, and like Chief Barbara mentioned, this young lady who passed, Ms. Mitchell, there are about maybe 10 churches within a 1 square mile radius of her home, which is still vacant. What could you suggest on how a person could start, for lack of a better term, a housing ministry to help people out? Because there are people out there that are hurting. They don't have the money to put the roof on. They don't have the more money to pay the water bill. If Chief Sango comes in, he's a plumber. You know, if he's going to be flying to whatever city, that costs money to educate people. So what could you suggest on, because from my knowledge, the Salvation Army alone, which is a church, gets over 200,000 calls a day. Can you help me pay my electric bill or water bill or something like that? So obviously, and I'm not saying that every faith-based organization meets every need, because everybody can't meet everybody's need. That just, it doesn't work that way. So, however, but this is a serious need. So if we wanted to start a housing ministry, or a water ministry, or you got your utility bills cut off ministry, what could we do to start that?
first of all, I think you have to get, I think churches, this is just me, but I think churches have to get more organized when it comes to social programs, because they're not a lot. I think some of your major mega churches now have their 501c3 where they're doing more social programs to help. But people have to get, the churches have to get the mentality is that it really is our responsibility as a church to teach and to support those kinds of issues. And but many have the mindset that says we're not the welfare office. Well, the welfare was created because the churches stopped doing what the churches were doing in the past. Now it's time to go back to the old ways. But
right, I agree.
We have to get to the mindset of teaching people. And oftentimes the system fails because people learn the system and then they're able to go. And it's a very small population, a very small numbers, but they make it bad for everyone, where they learn to where to go. I can go to Salvation Army on the 5th of this month, and then if I wait 15 days, then I can go to the Goodwill on that day, and then I can go to this church on that day, and then it goes round and round, and people learn these systems. And so because they've learned these systems, it discourages other agencies such as churches and some other social service agencies from helping everyone. And it's kind of a catch-22, but I think that there's a lot of churches that don't know how to work together. So if there was a system set up, it would have to be like an in-church agency, this is my thought, where everybody's pooling their dollars together, working together, educating people and helping, you know, because you could help them, but you've got to also teach. And then there's a level of accountability as well. So I don't know how to do it, but if I were to do it, I would do an interfaith agency, such as some of the other ones, but really get churches to buy into the whole idea of it's our responsibility to help those and to teach those, and it's going to be better for our population, our folks in the long run.
Okay. Now, Chief, you mentioned that at your place in Columbus, there are think tanks there, or at least that you're a part of?
Yeah, we organize that. We organize them through our gallery. We've been doing that for the longest. I learned that in high school, volunteers with the Quakers. I learned it from the Quakers. We would get some professor at Ohio State to come in, and we would get together at the Friends Meeting House on Fridays, and we would, whatever topic we wanted, we would get one of the professors to come and lead the discussion on it. It could be free love. It could be anything we wanted. And that's where I got the idea. So we naturally, I still do it at our gallery. We've had it on What in the Blink Do You Know? We've had it on metaphysics. We've had it on the flower of life. We've had it on the effects that the freeway caused on our community. We've had it on philosophy. There may be 7 major philosophies known now, and we might interact with either one of those philosophy in the morning or afternoon. So it's a way of giving the common people or the less educated people a wealth of knowledge by inviting someone and picking a topic and inviting some expertise on that topic, and then you get the energy built up there, and you also get different ideas from different people. So that's how we use it.
Well, that's
to solve
simple,
our problems,
like you say,
you know,
ordinary people. Yeah, ordinary people picking a topic, and you can start off at Starbucks or in somebody's living room. It's really is as simple as that. Okay, all right. Well,
I just want to say at the same time, for us to live in this, as a society, there has to be some rules and regulations. And
I agree.
And everything is irrelevant compared to what? So as long as we have people, there are going to be some people who are better off than others. So no matter what, you know, our poorest person here might be upper middle class in another country. So
right.
We have to establish a basic standard that a human being should have and provide that, and then if that human being wants more, then he needs to work more. And at the same time, the church needs to not only preach about Jesus, but it must also
mm-hmm.
practice what Jesus did. They must do the work of Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus, I'm here to lead, show you the way, but you'll be able to do greater things than I've ever done. So he already told us we got the power to do it. We just have to believe that, have faith in that, and exercise that power. And you do that by doing prayer without work. It ain't happening. You can pray,
right.
But you better do some work too. You see what I'm saying? So
right.
The church
You're
needs
right.
to not only preach about Jesus, but do the work of Jesus. You know, they're of a different mindset, seems like, and different values now. You know, they have to get back on track and help mm-hmm. people.
Right, back to basics. Back to
I think
basics.
God,
you're
the Creator gave the majority of the people who are on earth enough to maintain and survive. And it's up to us who have that resources to share to those who have less. To make things balance. It's more of a balancing thing we need to do. There's two extremes. There's the 3%, 300 families that control the wealth of the world. The biggest dope dealer in the world was the Queen of England. She sent all that dope over to China, and in exchange they had that triangle there. So, you know,
which still exists.
Color black. And
still
the United
exists.
States. Yeah, well, I mean, black people ain't. We're associated with all the dope, but we don't bring the dope in the country. We don't have the planes, the resources, but we're dumb enough to stand out here in the street and sell it where everybody can see us. So we're dealing with mm-hmm. the symptoms rather than the causes. We have to begin to deal with the causes. Like, look at the problem and say, well, what is the cause? What is causing this problem?
Right. Yeah,
deal with
right. Exactly. Cause. Look at the causes and... That's why I keep on bringing up the political and the special interest group and that's the cause. If you want to get, if you're tired of the effect, and that's one of the things I learned. I had to learn that, all right, I know what the effect is. I don't like the effect on me. So what is the cause? Mm-hmm. And that's when I, you know, started to do more research. Still do it. And, you know, I came across flag wars in my research because Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, which many people know her, is having a situation in D.C. with her house. And as a fundraiser or as a conscious awareness activity, they were doing flag wars, you know, as an educational piece. So that's how I found out about the documentary Flag Wars. Now, a lot of times, people say, particularly here in the United States, that black people don't have no money. I'm about to dispel that in two steps. Number one, in the United States, African Americans control $2.2 trillion of cash flow on a yearly basis. The next step, which is more than a lot of countries, $2.2 trillion. But it's how we spend it. Number two, and part of the way, if we do something stupid like Chief just said, you don't go out. I'm not advocating selling drugs at all. But if you do, come on, man. Don't be stupid and go out on the corner. Anyway, that's enough of that commentary. Now, Robert, what would you say would be the a person on welfare, just a ballpark figure that might be in the Seattle, Washington area? What mm-hmm. would be the yearly income of a person on welfare?
Oh, a person on welfare, if they're on GAU, they're getting like three something. So 300 times 12, that would, yeah. And then it could be, if they're single, it could be four maybe for something, but I doubt it. And then throw in $100 of food stamps, but I doubt it. And then also I found out that when we reach 50, the welfare expect for us to be drawing Social Security. And so when we reach 50, they will give us $10 in food stamps a month.
So you're saying basically they're getting about $10,000, $11,000
a year? Yep.
Yeah, yep. For a single person, and then you add $100 or $90 a month per child, I think it is, maybe $90.
Yep.
And
so that brings us up to maybe about $12,000 a year.
Yeah.
I would average it off to $12,000. That's what I would say, yep.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
Okay.
And it costs us more. It costs more than $12,000 a year for the average person to pay their rent. You know,
okay.
I pay $1,000 a month for my rent every month. So $12,000, that's their whole. And so if you look at it like that, after they paid for their, because of the bulk of our expenses anyway, so it's like, wow, how are they going to live? After
okay.
they paid their rent, and then,
my
God, they don't even have to pay their rent.
Okay, here's what I want you to do, because we have life skills, Kent. When the weather breaks, we're going to start getting out and doing these. It's a website titled Global Rich List, www.globalrichlist.com. Go to that site, bookmark it, because here's the second part. Like I said, black folks in the United States, $2.2 trillion a year. That's more than some countries. $12,000 a year income that a person might receive on welfare benefits. Some receive more, some might receive less, but let's put it at $12,000 because it's different everywhere you go depending on your city. $12,000 a year income, you're in the top 15% of the wealthiest people in the world. Just on welfare income. And that's why we want to get out with these life skills camps. Because one of the things that I learned when I went to Europe and spent, because I used to make like 3-month trips at a time over there, is a lot of Americans might call a lot of Germans, particularly ones that live in the villages, as cheap or frugal or some word like that. But they essentially consume less. A lot of us over here, we waste a lot. So it's like the people like with the minimum wage can go up to $200 an hour. If you don't know how to properly harness and use your resources, you're going to be ass out all the time. So go to that site, globalrichlist.com, and, you know, you can put in any figure you want. I put in $12,000. That puts a person on welfare. Hell, you got people in jail that get more income than that. That puts you in the 14.646 percentile of the wealthiest people on the planet. The distinction here that's missing is awareness. How do we manage our resources? And a lot of Westerners, I'm not putting this all on the United States, essentially we waste our resources. That's one of the it took me a little bit to adjust, but you know, I was in Rome. Now, speaking of in Rome, as the Romans, I was in Germany. So I had to basically adapt, but then after I adapted, I like said, you know what? This makes sense. Now, I'll give you one example. Just walking. Okay. I had access to a car, but no matter what, and I spent 3 consecutive winters over there. If we went grocery shopping, we had access to a car in freezing Germany, but we would walk or take a bike. Because over there, as they call it, sport is very important. So walking, going uphills, hiking, all that stuff. And first thing, it keeps you out of the emergency room. It helps cut back or eliminate prescription medication just by walking. So no matter, we only took the vehicle if we were going on a long, you know, trip or something like that, or over to the next town. But in town, you know, if it's within a 2 to 3 mile radius, we were walking. So when I came back to the States one time, my car went on a fritz. And I just got tired of getting nickel and dime by a daggone car. The car was already paid off. You know, brakes, look up, something, you know, something. So I said, you know what, for the last 3 months, I've been walking. And my house in D.C. is only like a 5-minute walk from the front door to the actual platform of the metro station, the subway. So I started, I had been doing it for 3 months prior. So I just started to walk. Didn't get, and before I knew it, it was 2 years later. Because once again, I wasn't staying in D.C. that much. D.C. was just a glorified suitcase. So before you know it, 2 years passed, and I hadn't even driven my car. And I didn't miss the maintenance. I didn't miss paying for gas and all that. And in the meantime, I joined the electrical vehicle club, too. So it's all in how you manage your resources, which we'll get into on It's My House, because going back to Baba, and that's why I want to do some workshops with them on harvesting rainwater, because, like I said, on a typical roof here in the United States or anywhere in the world where it rains, well, not anywhere, because some rain places it rains kind of sparse, but in the United States at least, over 42,000 gallons of rain hits a roof. If you got a carport, you're getting more water. If you got a garage, you're getting more water. You can harvest that water where, even if you're not going to drink it, you can flush the toilet with it and save 5 gallons of flush on that. You can water the plants. Matter of fact, I suggest the idea of a lawn is played out. Instead of growing grass, grow food. But we'll get in more shows like that. Anyway, that about wraps it up for, because we've been going at a stretch on this one. Yeah, we've been here for 2 hours. So, Cynthia, Robin, any questions to ask Baba before we sign off for today?
No.
Okay, Robin, somewhere. Chief, you want to throw in anything as some closing comments for today's show?
Yeah, we can. I have a very optimistic outlook. I think we can do anything we want to do, as long as it's legal and moral. And we need not be lazy. We ain't gonna burn out. Let's get to work. Let's figure out a plan.
We got to think.
When I was young,
like
some of these.
Yeah.
We have to figure out a plan how to steal the biscuit out of the white man's hand. That's just the same, but you know, I look at life like a chess game. If you look at it long enough, you're going to find a move into checkmate, and then checkmate, you know, that's the end of the game. You're dead or it's over, but just keep looking. There's
you know, it's interesting you said that. I play online. I got about 7 to 8 chess games going online right now just to keep my mind, because you got to think that way. You got to think 10, 20, 30, 40 moves out. It's the same thing with our property or anything in life. So we have to think strategically. Okay, now, Cynthia?
I have a question to interject just quickly.
Yes.
Because in many communities, we are just trying to get through the next day. So, and many people operate kind of in crisis mode. So it's very difficult to be strategic, and I think that's a great topic or workshop or something that you guys can do to get people to understand that we can't just, I mean, we've got to stop. Sometimes we just have to stop so that we can make a plan and start doing things strategically, because many people are just dealing with today and then waiting for tomorrow. trying to figure out all of that. So how do you
get... A lot of that is a mindset. It's the way
exactly.
we've been conditioned.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
We can
so
change.
How do you get them from that mindset of crisis mode, just trying to get through today, to let me stop, make a plan, and be strategic in the rest of my life?
Yeah, because the man's making a plan 10 years ahead, 20 years ahead. He even has a 100-year plan. We have to have plans, too. And we can do that.
Right,
we just
exactly.
Have, you can start with think
tanks. Right. Well, we got a think tank going here, or let's say with this show. Now, I want to put this one, all right, before I have people promote what they do, because I think, Chief, is you got a skill set that really needs to be out, because Cynthia is originally from Seattle, Washington, but she's in Arizona right now, and she's got a show called Living It Up After 50, which I'll have her promote in a moment. And Robin is in Seattle, Washington right now. She's got like 8 internet radio stations with access through Brother Mike of 12 more. And here's another reason why I had Chief on this show. Chief is what I call a green plumber. In other words, he can educate people in on how to harvest rainwater. He's got this, I mean, this is, he's got this, he's a plumber, but he's not your ordinary plumber, because he knows about rain harvesting and that type of thing, and he knows something about think tanks and the system, as he's demonstrated on his show today. So, because we need to put a life skills camp just centered around Chief alone, because there's a lot of people to talk about crisis mode, Cynthia. There are people right now all over this country that are praying for how I'm going to keep the water on, or if the water shut off. If they knew what he knew about rain harvesting, they could say, you know what, it's a blessing the water got cut off, I'm going to start harvesting the rainwater. Because I'm sure there are people that live in the
right.
area that is raining on, they've been praying, and God's answering their prayer with dumping all this rain on them, snow on them. However, they're not awake to what's obvious. So that's why I would like to, we're going to put something together, get Chief out on them more. And I know I'm jumping on a plane and going to him, too. Now, Cynthia, promotes your show, Living It Up After 50. When is that? That's on today, right?
It's on today, but we're not going to be on the air today because we're actually doing some stuff right now. It's on every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And starting on the 21st, we're starting our brand-new format and got some new exciting guests and some pretty rich new fun stuff. And so, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Okay. And Robin,
yes.
the mogul of the airwaves, you have these 8 radio stations and more coming. And what I really like about what Robin's doing is not so much the 8 radio stations, is she really awakened me on formats. Excuse me, demographics,
mm-hmm.
which convert into formats. Because there's so many demographics out here. Like the lady in Flag Wars, Miss Mitchell, she fits within a demographic. Okay, that is not being served actually globally. But anyway, Robin, could you tell us, you know, what you do and how you can help us get the word out on people like Chief?
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, using the social network agencies that posting and clicking, I'm real fond of, but it's basically it's like this: we will tend to look at a people or a group of people or a circumstance, and then if it doesn't fit the parameters of maybe what we're trying to do, we don't always see, and we will exclude it. Are not counted. And there are all these demographics, like the homeless, for for an example, these people are treated like worse than the worst, and they're counted as zero, but they are, they still pay taxes, they still pay work, they still work, and not only are they a demographic, like I like to say, an uncounted, unrealized demographic, but they also are a constituency, you know?
Right.
And then I have this thing about people make people like you make money, because with the, if you leverage the skill sets and the monies and the everything that somebody has to offer, then that person is a commodity, is tender. Does that make sense? Legal tender. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then all I've been doing with my platforms is people will go and they'll make a radio station or they'll make a website, and they may have to pay however much they pay for it, and then they'll want to immediately recoup their money by charging people to come to their site, but they don't have anything on there for them, right? Me, I'm a minister, so I spread the word of God, and I help people, and I do that by opening up my platforms, radio stations, sites, whatever, for them to come on and run their shows, run their platforms, whatever. I specialize in helping people expand. That's what I do. And I get to do that without charging and stuff like that, you know. And then I take that, and by giving people experiences, then they become viable and they make their own money. And then if they want to, they can give back and donate to me, and that's how it works. It's a win-win situation all the way around, and it's lovely. I get to meet L.A. Davis, I get to meet Chief, I get to meet Cynthia, and I get to work for you guys, too, and it's just such an awesome thing. I think it was Chief that said earlier, volunteer. That's all I'm doing. It's volunteering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope
okay.
I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. Because we, you know, she syndicates these shows, Chief, because, like, see, she's got 8 radio stations, and then, the access to what 12 more with the mic and more on a plan based on formats. Now, in closing, I'd like to dedicate this program to a lady that was featured in the film Flag Wars, Linda Regina Mitchell. She's no longer with us. I think she passed at 39. How many years ago, Chief?
Oh, I'm bad at numbers. Maybe 13, 14. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, she's featured prominently in the film Flag Wars. Chief knew her personally. Neighbor, he helped her. If you see the movie, you know, helped her with her plumbing, that type thing. Good neighbor, Chief is. And but she, at 39 years old, young woman, she's not with us anymore. And if you see in the movie, part of the process is partly she was like stressed out. I can relate to that, until I flip things around. So what we want to do is form this think tank so there won't be another Linda Regina Mitchell in this that passes on too early due to, I'm not judging. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what the death certificate is. I'm just putting it out there, L.A. story. So, but this is dedicated to her, Linda Regina Mitchell, so you'll see her in the movie Flag Wars. And, Chief, I really thank you for being on this broadcast because you helped inspire It's My House broadcast. Because, like I said, I saw Flag Wars before I even knew I was going to have a radio program, let alone like, It's My House. So we spent about 2 hours on here of your time. Thank you so much. I'll be giving you a call over the weekend because we want to do, particularly when the weather breaks, as March is here, is already here, get all this energy together and then get out and actually put feet to these prayers or ideas, so to speak. So thank you once again, Chief, for participating and taking 2 hours out of your day.
The pleasure was mine. I just like to play the role of a servant. It's a lot easier. It's safer. And it's the way I see the travel right now, so it's been my pleasure to be any help anyone. And it's not, like I say, we have to get away from the race thing. It's a people thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, too, we have to take responsibility. That covers that. That says it all right there. Okay, well, that's about it for this episode podcast of It's My House. It will be ready in on-demand form in a few minutes. Chief, I'll send you a link of it, and I'll talk to all you guys later today as well.
All right.
Okay.
Odabo, as we say in Yoruba.
Okay.